Let's discuss Mechias HaMalek a little bit further this morning before we start our blot in Megillah Daf Tes. And here, what we want to emphasize is the following. We had a kasha the Minchas Chinuch on the Chinuch. The Chinuch writes in the mitzvah of Zohar, that's Tofresh Gimel, that women are not obligated in the mitzvah of Zohar. And the reason for that is because they're not obligated in the mitzvah of Mechias HaMalek. And the question was, what do we do with the Mishnah in Sota, that for Melchemes Mitzvah, Filu Kali Yotzeis Michupasa. And we had a proof from the Sefer HaChinuch that he writes that the mitzvah, the concept of Melchemes Mitzvah includes Amalek as well. That's in Mitzvah Tuf Chaf Hei. The answer suggested is that Noshim Lav B'nei Melchemes Ninhu. However, there might be an element in the mitzvah of milchama that includes women as well, even though they're not benos milchama. And that could justify the Mishnah in Sota. And that is the following. We find in the Rambam, in Perkei Milchus Melachim, a fundamental distinction between the mitzvah of Hachreim, Tachreim, with regard to destroying the Shiva Amavim, that's an Halacha Dalet, as opposed to the mitzvah of Amalek in Halacha Hei. In the mitzvah of Hachreim, Tachreim, the Rambam writes, Kol haba liyado echad mihem, v'lo harogo over b'lo taseh, shenemar los chaya kol neshama. So here we have clearly a mitzvah kol yachid v'yachid, Kshiba echad liyado v'lo harogo over. But in Halacha Hei, when the Rambam defines the mitzvah of Mechias HaMalek, he speaks about the tzibur. And in Sefer HaMitzvahs, Mitzvah Reish Mem Ches, he's outspoken about this, and he says that the mitzvah to destroy a Molech is a chov al tzibur, v'lo al kol ish v'ish. So we see a fundamental difference here in the Rambam's frame of reference between the mitzvah of Zayin Am and the mitzvah of Molech. The former is a chovas yachid. The latter, meaning Amalek, is a chovas tzibur. Now, this could have a tremendous impact on the role and the responsibility of Noshim vis-a-vis these two mitzvahs and shed a light on the mission in Sota, Filu Kali, Yotzis Michupasa. Because with regard to the chovas yachid that the Rambam formulates with regard to Zayin Amamim, we could suggest that chova includes not just milchama in the strict sense, meaning going out to battle and being there as a soldier on the front line, but it could be expanded to include lava liezra, meaning to be in the back lines, you know, behind the front lines, and supply whatever is necessary. That's including a chovas yachid. Milchama is more strict and more restricted, well defined, and the bounds are going out in the front lines as a soldier and facing the enemy. Now, here we can differentiate between Zayin Amamim and Amalek according to the Rambam. Zayin Amamim has the additional element, the dimension of a chovas yachid. And here we can suggest the following, that even though women are not obligated in milchama per se to be in the front lines because la benos milchama ninhu, nevertheless, they pick up the mitzvah of lavo b'ezra. And that's within the broader purview of hachrem tachrem as a mitzvah mutelos al kol echad, al kol yochid v'yochid, and even noshim are included because that mitzvah is not a zman grova mitzvah, and it's not a mitzvah milchama per se in the strict sense, where we would apply the p'tur of lav benos milchama ninu. And it, this also would explain that a woman would not have to put her life into danger for the mitzvah of Zayin Amamin. And the reason for that is because we're not talking about strict milchama, where by definition the essence of the mitzvah is to put your life in danger. Now, if we were to assume for just one moment here, on a theoretical basis, that the chinuch would accept the Rambam's distinction, and with regard to the mitzvah of hamolik, there's a chovas tzibur, which means that hamolik is a mitzvah milchama, as it says in the parasha there in Vishalach, milchama l'ashem v'hamolik. Therefore, women are exempt for the mitzvah of mechias hamolik because la benos milchaminin. And that includes even that secondary or auxiliary broader chiyuv of Lav Eliezra. So when the Mishnah in Sota says afilu kal yotzis michuposo, the Mishnah is not referring to milchemes Amalek, but rather to milchemes Zayin Amamin. That's where a woman has the chiyuv to go out, although she doesn't go out to the front lines as a soldier, but she picks up this mitzvah behind the lines of Lav Eliezra. So that even though the chinuch is committed to the position that milchemes amolik is a milchemes mitzvah, nevertheless the chinuch assumes that women are not chayiv in the mitzvah, they're not benos milchama. Only in the case of hachroma zayin amamin would women be chayiv Lav Eliezra because of the mitzvah that's mutelas al kol yochid v'yochid, but in mechias amolik, which is a chovas milchama and only a chovas milchama, which is incumbent upon the tzibur, there is no element of a chiyuv al kol yachid, as we medayik in the Rambam's Lashon and Perkei. And women, therefore, since they're lav benos milchama, they don't have they don't participate at all in the obligation of mechias hamolek. And the chinuch in Mitzvah Tofresh Dalid writes, Nitztavenu limchos zara shalamolik vizos min ha-mitzvah samutolos al ha-tzibur. So if we would stop here in the Sefer HaChinuch, everything is fine. Meaning the Chinuch is committed to the position of the Rambam that the mitzvah mechias hamolik is incumbent as a chovas milchama and only as a chovas milchama on the tzibur. Now, there are other Dfusim, other editions of the Sefer HaChinuch, which add a whole piece to Mitzvah Tofresh Talid. I'll read that piece to you. It says, Be'emes, ki gam al kol yochid mi Yisrael and his chorim muta l'achiv l'horogo. V'yor al zeh u'bo liyodo ech mizar shalom alki l'horogo b'itel esei zeh. Here it seems clear that the Chinuch holds that even in mitzvahs amolik, like in the mitzvah achromah zayin amamim, in addition to the chovas milchama, there's also a mitzvah unto itself of mechias amolik that's incumbent upon every yachid v'yachid. And then our teretz to justify why women are exempt from the mitzvah milchama according to the Sefer HaChinuch is not correct, since the Sefer HaChinuch himself has this double mitzvah with regard to Milchemes Amalek, as he does in Zayin Amamin. So we're left with the Minchas Chinuch's Kasha as an outstanding question. And we also have to ask the question, what within the framework of the Chinuch in Mitzvah Tofresh Dalid, that he writes, Al Kol Yochid V'Yochid Mi'Yisrael Haschor Mutal Achiv L'Hargam, clearly indicating that women are not part of the mitzvah mechias hamolek, despite the fact that there's a chovas yachid, according to again that girsin and tefusim. And if we want to ask the following question: why does the chinuch in chachrom and zayin amim include women, insofar as the chiyuv al kol yachid yachid, but he doesn't have that in mitzvahs hamolek? And perhaps we could suggest that the Sefer HaChinuch wants to make a distinction between mitzvahs mechias hamolek and mitzvahs hachrim tachrimim, that perhaps the mitzvah of mechias hamolek in its very essence is only a chovas milchama, as the pasuk says, milchama l'ashem b'hamolek. And the Chinuch would hold that the mitzvah of milchama, which defines the essence of hamolek, is different. Chovas Melchama Molik is different than any other Chovas Melchama, insofar as that Chovas Melchama Samolik is not incumbent exclusively on the Tzibur. It expands according to the Tfusim in the Melchima to include the Yochid V'Yochid. And that's because the Pasuk says Melchama Lashem Ba'Molik, and it says Midar Dar. And that Midar Dar generates an obligation that's constant in terms of Melchama at any time, B'chol Eisu B'chol Zman. And that's going to generate a Chiyuv Yochid, but again, it's only because of the framework of Melchama. So Mirzchem will have to see if we can develop this idea, and you'll turn to page Reish Kaf. Let's just go over, if you don't mind, this is for me a Chasara, of the Kasha of Rabbi Kivegan. You remember that the Mishnah had on Daf Ches contrasts Sefer Torah with Tefillin and Mezuzos as far as Chol Lashon is concerned. Rabbi Kivegan was bothered because there's Halacha and Tefillin of a Psul of Shalom Kisidron. So if you write the Parashios of the Tefillin out of order, the Tefillin are psulos, and Rabbi Kivega quotes Poskim that the same din applies to mezuzah. In Sefer Torah, by contrast, if it was written Shalom Kisidram, the Sefer Torah is still kosher. So that would be another example of a chumrah in Tefillin over Sefer Torah. Not just that Tefillin have to be written in Lashon Ashuris, but they have to be written Kisidram. So I have here an answer in the name of the Taz. The Taz writes that if he was makdim Parshas Vahoya im Shemoa to Parshas Shema, the mezuzah is kshera. And the psul of Shalom Kisidron only applies within the same parsha. So if you're switching the order of the writing of two different parshios, that's not a problem in mezuzah. Although the Taz agrees that in Tefillin there would be a psul of Shalom Kisidron even within the parsha. I'm sorry, even from one parsha to the other. So again, whereas in Mezuzah says the Taz, the psul is only within the parsha, but not from one parsha to the other. So if you switch the order of parshas Vahoya im Shema and parshas Shema, that would not undermine the kashas of the Mezuzah. In the case of Tefillin, however, there's a broader scoped psul of Shalom Kisidron that applies even within the order of two different, even as far as the order of two different parshas, and not only within the order of one parsha. Oh, so the Mariel Diskin wants to suggest that that's the answer to Rabbi Kivega's question. Why didn't our Mishnah address the halacha of Shalom Kisidron? Because the Mishnah is trying to pile up Tefillin and Mezuzah on one side against Sefer Torah on the other side. But when there's a halacha that differentiates between Tefillin and Mezuzah themselves, that the Mishnah is not going to mention. Now the Rashash quotes a Pischei Tshuva in Yerodea Siman Reish Ayin Vav. And the Pischei Tshuva quotes Achronim that say that the psul of Shalom Kisidron might apply even to a Sefer Torah. Oh, good morning, Asher. So I'm just finishing up until we hit the 7:30 bell. Now, what are we talking about here? We're talking about a special halach in Sefer Torah of Ksivas Hashem. There are unique dinim that apply to the Shem Hashem when you're writing a Sefer Torah. And according to these poskim, one of those unique dinim is that you have to make sure that you write the letters of the name of Hashem, Kisidron. If you write the Yud, and then you skip to the Vav, and then you fill in the Hey afterwards, then the Shem is possible, and therefore the Sefer Torah is possible. And the Rashash wants to suggest that in this context, Rabbi Kivega's Kasha of Shalom Kisidron is actually a common denominator between Sefer Torah and Tefillin and Mezuzah. That Sefer Torah also
has a psul of shalok kisidron. So in other words, even though there are minute differences and important differences in halacha between the shalok kisidron of as a psul in Sefer Torah and the parallel psul in Tefillin Mezuzah, but nevertheless they all have the common fundamental principle of kisidron, the requirement of kisidron. Now here's an interesting discussion. I don't know if you've ever had an experience where you're writing a letter or a document, whatever you're writing, notes, and you leave out a word. So what you might do, I know this is what I do, is you write the word above the line. And the question is, can you do such a thing in a Sefer Torah and in Tefillin and Mezuzah? So this is Yerushalmi, here in Masechta Megillah, and Yerushalmi makes a sharp distinction here, a contrast between Sefer Torah on the one hand and Tefillin and Mezuzah on the other hand. In the case of Sefer Torah, Efshar Litlos Teva Bein Hashitim. Whereas in Tefillin and Mezuzah, Posel. And this Yerushalmi is brought down L'Halacha in the Sefer HaTruma. And the explanation of the Sefer HaTruma for this distinction is the following. That the Psul of Tliya means, Bein HaShitim, with regard to Tefillin and Mezuzah, Mishum D'Nichtavu Shalo Kisidron. This is also considered a Shalo Kisidron, meaning he reminded himself afterwards that he left out a word. So that's called Shalo Kisidron. However, in contrast to the Sefer HaTruma, the Shut HaRan quotes the Sefer HaTruma and he rejects it. And he says that the Psul has nothing to do here with Shalo Kisidron. And he says that the Psul itself has to do with Ksiva itself. That in Tefillin u'Mezuzah, there's a special halacha of ksiva tama, of a perfect kind of a ksiva, which means that you have to write it straight across the shitim and not bein hashitim, not in the space between one line and the other. And he says the following, that if you read the Yerushalmi carefully, it says, Sfarim shekosfam kitfilin mezuzos, ain tolim behem, tfilin mezuz shekosfam kisfarim tolim behem. Says the Ran, what does this mean? It's not included in the Ein Bains here in Masechta Megillah, because Mashatolim Bisfarim, the permissibility of putting a word in between the lines in a Sefer Torah, Ein Tolim B'Tfilin Mezuzah, Eino Michomras Tfilin Mezuzah, V'Eino Kula Shel Sifrei Torah, El Mishum Derech Ksiva, that there's a lot of Derech Ksiva. In the case of Sifrei Torah, he says, Yesh Revach Harbe Bein Shita L'Shita. A Sefer Torah, which is written on Gvil, and there's a large, there's a large letters and large spaces. He says that it's considered Kederech Ksivasam, even if you are tolim between one sheet to the other. Amal B'Tfilin Mezuzah, Ain't Tfilosam Gasa, you don't have spreading out over the cloth, but rather you have ksivasan daka, and ksiva daka is ein tolin. It's not considered kederech ksivasan. And again, the Ran, we don't have time for this now, but the Ran integrates this into the Yerushalmi word for word. So basically, according to the Ran, the psul of tolin in Tefillin of Mezuzah has nothing to do with shalok kisidron, it has to do with halach of kederech ksivasan. And he claims that that's not within the purview of this Mishnah here of Ein Bein in Masechta Megillah. If there's a fundamental difference, then it should be recorded by the Mishnah in the Ein Beins. But this is not a fundamental difference. This has to do with what's considered Kiderach Sivasan, the normal way that you would write. And in Tefillin, you have one normal way of writing because of the Ksiva Daka, as opposed to Sefer Torah. Okay, Rabbos, I think we're ready to get back to our discussion here about Talmai HaMelech. Okay, then. Moshe's just on time. We're about to start, Moshe. And here we are on Daf Zion. Just one second. We're not yet up to Daf Zion. Yeah, we're up to Daf Zion. No. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong one. at the wrong page. Yes, Chesal Menachem. Thank you so much. Okay. Now you recall that the Chachamim wanted to translate the Torah in a way that would avoid any major mistakes. The mistakes that we spoke about until now have to do with what we call Shtei Rishayos, which is, it's called Gnosticism. Actually, you don't pronounce the G at the beginning, but the belief in more than one God. And there are various psukim that if you translate them literally, it sounds like there are two gods. Like, for example, Elohim, it says Bracious Bara Elohim, as if Bracious was a god creating Elohim, or Ese Adam Bitzelem Dmuso, that's the way they translate, but it says Nasa Adam, right, Nasa Adam. Or, for example, how could it possibly be that God rested on the seventh day, meaning he was working on the seventh day? That's also problematic. So in all these cases, there was retranslation. However, now at this juncture, I think we're changing sort of the road, the path. Because the Torah says, Zachar unekeva bra'am. That's not the way that the Chacham will translate, as we'll soon see. But here's what the problem is. If you read it and translate it as is, Zachar unekeva bra'am, then you get the impression that God created two gufim. Bra'am is in the plural. He created a zachar and an akeva. And they're separate bodies, but yet they both are zachar and akeva. So how did he create them, meaning these two bodies? He created them zachar and akeva, which means that every one of these two gufos that he created was both male and female. And that means what's called shnei partsufim. So there was one face that was male and the other face that was female. But that's not true. That's not the way God created man. And therefore, the Chachamim, reinterpreted the Pasuk, and here's how they translated the Pasuk. Zachar unekeva bra'o. Which means that man was created one goof, not two goofim, but that one goof had two partsufim. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know, Rabosei, if you ever learned the Masechta Ksubis, but in the Sugi of Sheva Brachos, the Gemara there on Daf, whatever it is, Daf Zayin, I don't remember where it is, The Gemara goes through that whole Sugi of man being created with two parts Sufim, and then God separated man into two. And that's how the Gemara explains the Nusach of the Sheva Brachos. Now, I have to comment, and again, you know, please research this and slug me up if I'm wrong, because again, if we had more time, I'd go through the Yalkut Biurim on this. But this doesn't seem to have anything to do with what I call religious philosophy. I mean, what difference does it make whether man was created two gufim with two parts sufim, or one guf with two parts sufim? So there are obviously deeper meanings here going on.
We are what we are, that's it. Like.
Right. So, you could say that, you know, that what the Chacham here had to do, and they got a miracle in doing it, was to set the record straight exactly how God created man. But I have a feeling it goes way beyond that, and that would require, I think, a deeper philosophical study. Okay, now we have the case of the Tower of Bavel, right? And in the Tower of Bavel, the Pasuk itself says, Hava Nerda Vinavla Shams Vasayim. Now, Hava Nerda, this is a classical case of Shtei Rishoyos, because Nerda is in the plural. And instead, the Chacham translates Hava Erda Ve'evla Shams Vasayim in the singular. So, in that sense, we have another example of avoiding Shtei Rishoyos. But now we go on to a different parasha. You remember when the Malachim come and tell Avram and Sarah that at their old age they're going to father a child, a mother a child. Vatitzchak Sarah. Now in our pasuk it says Bikirba. Bikirba means inside her heart. Now the Chachamim wanted to avoid this translation. Why? Because if she only was laughing inside, then God's response here would seem to imply a certain prejudice. Let me explain. In Avraham Avinu, the pasuk is almost identical as when Avraham Avinu is notified that he's going to father a child. It says, "Vayipol Avraham al panav vayitzchak." The same word, vayitzchak. Here it's vayitzchak Sarah, and here it's vayitzchak in Avram. And yet, we don't find that Avram Avinu incurred the wrath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God was not makpin on Avram Avinu. But in the case of Sarah, Hashem goes ballistic. And he says, Lama zetzachaka Sarah. And he goes on to say, does she think that I'm not omnipotent and I can't do everything? Mm-hmm. So is God prejudiced here in favor of men as opposed to women, in favor of Avram as opposed to Sarah?
They were ready for that argument.
They were probably ready for that. Yeah. So the Chachamim translated is as Vatitzchak Sarah Bikroveha.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay, now what does Bikroveha mean as opposed to Bikirba? Bikroveha means She'omra Sadvarim Eitzel HaKrovim. She started blabbing, so to speak. She started saying it over to her relatives, her friends, her neighbors, and she said, wait a minute, come on, who are you fooling? So even though Avraham Avinu might have also harbored a certain, you know, question and amazement about how this could possibly come to pass, but nevertheless he didn't go to that one step further and start publicizing, hey, did you hear the latest news? I'm going to become a father at the age of 100. Mm-hmm. And Sarah went that step far. Now here, Rabosai, there's a tremendous literature on this one line in the Gemara. How could the Chachamim come up with this perush, or shall I say this? You know, there's a funny line between translation and commentary, because in this case, there's an overlap between the two. In a sense, by translating the word bikirba as bikroveha, you're really throwing in a whole new light on what the pasuk is. It's not really translation, it's more interpretation. And is this interpretation MS or is it not MS? Did Sarah actually go to her neighbors and spread the word? And many of the Farshim want to say that that's exactly what happened. And what we're seeing here is what we call Torah Shebaal Peh, meaning, in Torah Mechsav, the word is Bikirba, but very often in Torah Shebaal Peh, you rewrite the word, and certainly reinterpret the word, and that's exactly what Chazal did. And this was Chazal's answer to the question as to why HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so makpin on Sarah, not so makpin on Avram. So from that perspective, it wasn't that the Chacham Chas V'Shalom were fabricating a lie and falsifying the truth, but rather they were giving the Torah Shebaal Peh in the translation of Torah Mechsav. Now, I just want to mention, as we pass, that the Chassam Sofer, who lived about 150 years ago, was very opposed. I mean, this was one of his, fighting, you know, fighting a battle of teaching children, young children, Torah Shebichsav as a literal translation. He felt that even young children have to understand, have to be taught the psukim based on Torah Shebaal Peh. And the reason I mention this Chassam Sofer is because I think it really sheds a light on what's going on here. This miracle was trying to avoid a literal translation of Torah Shebichsav. Why is a literal translation of Torah Shebichsav so dangerous? Mm-hmm. Because you miss the second layer. And the second layer, which is Torah Shebaal Peh, it puts the Torah Shebaal Peh in a whole different light.
Well, you can't learn one without the other. You can't study the Bible.
So it seems that at the time of Chassam Sofer, he had to fight a battle about this, because the syllabus and the curriculum for young children was Torah Shebaal Peh until, I'm not sure what age, maybe until they were 9, 10 years old.
Right.
And the philosophy of education that Chassam Sofer was fighting against was that we can't teach Torah Shebaal Peh to children, because they're not mature enough, they're not old enough, yeah, and we have to just exclusively make sure they know all of Tanakh before we go on.
Right.
But Tanakh has Ein Mikra Yotze V'dei Pshuto. And Chassam Sofer felt that was one of the main causes, which something he witnessed in his time, that many children, unfortunately, you know, as we would say in our parlance, went off the derech. And he says because they were so stuck in their minds as children with what was fed to them as Ein Mikra Yotze V'dei Pshuto, that they rejected Torah Shebaal Peh at an older age. But if you're ever interested in this, I can give you the literature on this. It's very fascinating. But I think that's what's going on here in this sugya. You know, Maybe Talmai was an enemy of the Jewish people, and he wanted to use this translation as a way of undermining the Torah, because he assumed that there would be discrepancies, and that many of the Chacham would translate the Pesukim in a way that he could say what he had to say about it. You know, in every case he could falsify the Torah. And this great miracle had to happen. And this is Torah Shebaal Peh, but it's not a falsification of the Torah, but rather it's, as I called it before, the overlap between translation and interpretation. Now we get to the parasha which we read not long ago of Shechem. And if you remember, and I'm sure you all remember, that Yaakov Avinu is going to lace it into Shimon Velevi because they destroyed the city of Shechem. Now, if you take the Psukim literally, Yaakov seems to be accusing Shimon and Levi of murder, of outright murder. And I'll read the Pasuk to you. It says, Ki bi'apam hargu ish. That's what it says. And then at the end of the Pasuk it says, Birtsonam iku shor. Notice they killed not only the human beings, they wiped out the entire city, including its animals. Now, this is great, you know, this is great feeding, you know, this is really good food for Talmai HaMelech, you know, if you translate this literally, you know, that Yaakov himself accuses his two sons of being murderers. And that's what the Pasuk seems to indicate, Al Pi Pshuto Shel Mikra. But instead, the Chachamim translate as follows, Ki Bi'apam Hargu Shor, Ubertzonam Ikru Evus, which are two ways of saying, basically, that they killed the animals of Shechem. Now, what does this mean, that Yaakov Avinu is castigating for killing the animals? So the answer is, and I'm quoting here from the Marsha, that this concept of Shor means that from Yaakov Avinu's perspective, the members of Shechem deserve to die, and they you know, killing the members of Shechem would be considered like killing behemoths. And why is that? Because the members of Shechem were guilty of Avodah Zarah. They were idol worshippers way before this incident with Dinah. And therefore, as idol worshippers, violating the fundamental mitzvah of the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, they deserve to die. That's a principle in Gemara and Sanhedrin, right? Azarasam zui misasa. So therefore, what the Pasuk is saying now is that in the eyes of Yaakov Avinu, it's ke'ilu hargu behema. Meaning the same, they could be held guilty of killing the Anshei Shechem in the same way that you'd be guilty of killing behemoths. Maybe that's Baltashkis or whatever the Isser is. So again, we're seeing here that the Torah Shebaal Peh is being used as a translation of the Pshuto Shel Mikra, but it's not a falsification of the truth. Adarama, Shimon and Levi were not guilty of whatchamacallit, of murder, but rather of a much less crime. You know, maybe it was more of a, I mean, they were bimidos because they let their caste control them. Maybe it was a kind of rebellious act because they didn't consult with Yaakov. You know, the various interpretations of the nature of their sin. Now we get to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is taking his children and his family back from Midian to Mitzrayim. Vayikach Moshe ishto v'esponov vayarkivem. Now in the Pasuk it says, Al hachamar. He had them riding a donkey. But instead they translated, Al nosei b'nei adam, on carriers of people. Now, carriers of people could include the most wonderful of all animals. Like, for example, a horse carries people, a camel you could ride. Right. Chamor is like for the lowest of the low. Some of the Mepharshim say that since his wife is included here, it's not tzius for a woman, you're right, to be riding on a chamor. But whatever it is, it seems that this would have been food, you know, fuel for the flame of Talmai HaMelech to ridicule the Torah and say, Moshe Rabbeinu, here's your great Moshe Rabbeinu, your great Rabbi Moshe, and the best he could do is ride a chamor and take his family on a chamor. But again, it's not that they're falsifying the meaning of the Torah, because nosei b'nei adam is a generic term that can include a sus, it can include a gamal, it can include a chamor. You, Talmai HaMelech, you take your choice, you know, but you can't commit us to chamor. Now we have, this is really complicated. I'm going to try to do the best I can on this one. Umoshav b'nei Yisrael asher yashuv Mitzrayim b'shar ha'aretzos arba me'oshana. Now here, what the Chachamim did was, they added a piece to the Torah. The Torah doesn't say b'shar ha'aretzos. The Torah says, "Moshav bnei Yisrael asher yashav b'Mitzrayim shloshim shana ve'arba me'ot shana." So if you translate this literally, the people of Israel were in Mitzrayim for 430 years. Now that's sheker. That's not true. If you take the pasuk literally, then you're stuck. Because you can go through the Torah, which he does here in the footnotes, I'm not going to do it now, and prove that the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim for all told 210 years. So how could the Torah testify that they were in Mitzrayim for 430 years? Oh, the answer lies in the addition of the word Bishar Arotzos. That the concept of Moshav Bnei Yisrael is not only in Mitzrayim, but rather in other lands. How so? Now we turn back to the Brisbane of Asorim in Parshas Lech Lecha, and it says over there, Ki ger yezaracha bi eretz lo lahem. Oh, here the Torah is much more generic, and Avraham Avinu receives this divine promise that there'll be gerim in a land that's not theirs. So that's already a more generic term. It doesn't specify Mitzrayim. And then it goes on to say arba me'ot shana. So in other words, the gzerah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed on the descendants of Avram to be Gerim was not in Mitzrayim necessarily for 400 years, but be Eretz Lo Lahem. And now the calculation goes as follows. Yitzchak was born to Avram Avinu in Eretz Plishtim. Eretz Plishtim is also considered Eretz Lo Lahem insofar as we don't have political control over the Eretz Plishtim. From the time that Yitzchak Avinu was born until they left Mitzrayim was exactly 400 years. Now, how do we get to the number 430? How do we get the extra 30 years? So he says the following. That Avram Avinu settled in the land of Plishtim, and it seems like Hebron was also in the land of Plishtim, 30 years before the birth of Yitzchak. So now if we add the 30 years to the 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak until Yetzias Mitzrayim, we get 430 years. But again, that would only make sense if we take a more liberal interpretation of the pasuk, and instead of translating as Asher Yashuv b'Mitzrayim, you translate it as Gerim, meaning Bishara Rotzos. So the concept here is not Mitzrayim, but rather Gerus be Eretz Lo Lahem. And this is the way the Chazal reconciled what seems to be two contradictions. Number one, how could the Torah say that the people of Israel lived in Mitzrayim for 430 years? That's not true. And secondly, the pasuk back in the promise and the gzera of Bris Mei Nebesarim just indicates Eretz Lo Lahem. It doesn't say anything about Mitzrayim. So to reconcile all this, what the Chachamim did with the miracle of the time of Talmai HaMelech, they translated Ubishar. Ubishara Rotzos. So it means the Geirus of Klal Yisrael in lands that were not theirs extended for 400 years. Okay. Now we get to the following. So again, all this is to make sure that Talmai doesn't trip us up on some sort of contradiction in the Torah. Now we get to the parasha at the end of Mishpatim. That's, I think, Shmos Chav Talid. And there, at the time of Matan Torah, the Torah says the following. I'm going to read the pasuk as we have it. Vayishlach es na'arei b'nei Yisrael. Na'arei means young lads, if you take it literally. Vayalu olos vayizbechu zvachim shlomim l'ashem parim. These were the karbonos that were brought at the time that Klal Yisrael received the Torah. And if you're even vaguely familiar with the Gemara in Krisus, that these karbonos were part of the process of national gerus, because a ger, when the Migdash stands, has to bring karbonos. In any event, the literal translation here is na'arei b'nei Yisrael. Now, what happens is these karbonos were meant to receive the Shechina. It's part of what we call Kabbalas Pnei Shechina. So who is sent as our agents to be Makabal Pnei Shechina? Na'arim? If you take the pasuk literally, it sounds like we're talking about Ketanim. Ketanim have no chashivas to them. They have no significance. So therefore the Chacham miraculously and simultaneously, unanimously translated as Vayishlach es Zatute B'nei Yisrael. Zatute is a Greek word. And the word Zatute means Chashivus. It's a Lashon of Chashivus. Like, for example, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, when it wants to talk about it wants to talk about an object that you, let's say you possess an object and it was washed away into the depth of the sea, and therefore there's Yeush and you don't have to return it if you get deep sea divers and you retrieve it from the bottom of the sea. That's called Zuto Shalyam. That word Zuto is a Greek word. And Zuto Shalyam means like the deepest part of the sea. That's a chashivus. So not to misunderstand this pasuk and think that we sent the shluchim to be makabel pnei shechina, the lowest of the lower. No, that's not what it means. These na'arim, and again throughout Tanakh the word na'arim is used to mean atzilim. Atzilim means of the chashuvim. They translated it into a Greek word that would indicate the chashivus, the significance of these individuals, and they were zatute. Now, in the same context, the pasuk says, "Vasatzile bnei Yisrael lo shalach yado." And again, here in this context, the word atzile indicates chashivus. So there was no need for the chacham to change this translation. But since they wanted to be consistent with the first part of the pasuk, so again they translated it as zaatute in the same way. And here we turn to Daf Tes Amud Beis. Now this is a pasuk in Bamidbar Perek Tes Zayin, where Moshe Rabbeinu, after the Jewish people complain, he cries out that I didn't abscond with anything that belongs to the Jewish people. So let's read the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Lo chamor echad mehem nosasi." I never stole a single donkey. Now, if you translate that literally, Talmai HaMelech is going to come forward. He says, "Oh, you know what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying? I never stole a donkey, but maybe I stole something else." Right? He would be Medayik. He's a big Talmud Chacham, Talmai HaMelech, right?
Once he gets this far in the... If he gets this far in the Chumash, he's going to be a Talmud.
Yeah. So in this context, the Chachamim translated the word in a different way. Lo chemed echad mehem nasati. Chemed means something that's beloved or cherished, something that's desirable. I didn't take anything that's desirable. And that means I didn't take anything from them, anything of value. Okay, now we're fast forwarding to Parshas Vaschanon. There it says, I'll read the psukim that when Moshe Rabbeinu warns the Jewish people against Avodah Zorah, he says, Upen tisa einecha hashamayma. God is warning us, don't lift your eyes to heaven. So we're talking about sun worshippers and the like, you know, where celestial spheres are now worshipped. And then it says, now, if you read this pasuk and translate it literally, it sounds like there's no problem with the Chol Ha'amim. What do I mean? It says the following. The pasuk literally castigates the Jewish people about worshipping idols, but L'Chol Ha'amim, as far as the other nations of the world, then Tachas Kol Ha'amim, they can worship anything. Meaning that if you misinterpret this pasuk, as Talmai HaMel certainly we did, he would take Avodah Zarah out of the seven mitzvahs B'nai Noach and come to the conclusion that a B'nai Noach is allowed to worship an idol. So instead, to sharpen up the true and the correct interpretation, they translate it as Asher Cholak Hashem Elokech Osam Lehoyer L'Chol Ha'amim. That the Jewish people was spread out amongst the nations in order to be the light of the nations, and they should teach the nations that idol worship is absolutely to be rejected. Now, as far as someone who worships Avodah Zarah, the pasuk in Devarim says the following. And again, I'm going to read the pasuk as we have it. Vayelech vayavad Elohim achirim vayishtachu lahem ulashemesh oliarech ulachol tzva shamayim asher lo tzivisi. Now, what does that mean, asher lo tzivisi? You could say that the word tzivisi, and this is based on a pasuk in Tehillim, which we recite every morning, Ki hu tziva v'nivro, that the word tziva means to create. Tziva means God enunciated the words and then created. So it seems like what the pasuk is saying is that people worshipped the sun or the areach or any part of the celestial spheres, Asholotzi Visi, which I didn't create. As if to say, you know, it's okay to worship that which I created, but don't worship those parts of the skies and the heavens that I didn't create. And now, the people, the Talmai at the helm, would now come to the mistaken conclusion that there are various gods, and one god created the celestial spheres, the other god created the other. So therefore, the Chacham translates, "Vayelef vayavod Elohim acherim asher lo tzivisi le'avdam." Now the word tzivisi doesn't mean to create, but rather it means to serve. And lo tzivisi le'avdam means that I enjoin you from worshipping all those creations. Now, in the Parsha Macholos Asuros, which is in Parsha Shmini, there's a list of kosher animals and non-kosher animals. Amongst the non-kosher animals is the rabbit. Okay? Now the rabbit is called by the Torah Anar Neves. Now the problem here is that by classifying our Neves as a behemoth mea, there's an implicit insult to the wife of Talmai HaMelech, because Talmai HaMelech's wife was called our Neves. So instead of translating it as Arneves into Greek, which would be an insult to the wife of Talmai, Kosvulo, they said Estziras Haraglayim. Now, a rabbit apparently has small arms that are shorter than their legs. So that's called Tziras Haraglayim. And Lo Kosvulo, they didn't write the Es Arneves, but they should Ishto Shel Talmai Arneveshma, Shelo Yomar, and then the Greeks will say, Sachaku bi HaYehudim, the Jews are making fun of me, the Tilu Shem Ishti Batorah, they took the name of my wife in the Torah, amongst the Chayos Tmeos, and they injected it there as a Chayot Tmeos. That was their implicit making fun of us, meaning of my wife. So again, there's no falsification of the truth here, because the translation is just taking the word Arneves and sort of abstracting it. What's unique about the Arneves is the way its front legs are shorter than its back legs, if you will. Now there's an Ibn Ezra who tries to explain why her name was Arneves. If you're interested, we can research that. So Rabosai, this actually comes to the end of the sugya of Talmai HaMelech. Now, what the Gemara never addresses is why Talmai HaMelech was so interested in this, but I think it becomes clear from everything that we did is that Talmai HaMelech is the enemy of the Jewish people. He's trying to falsify the Torah. But I have to tell you that you all know this, but I'll tell you anyway, in the works of philosophy, the prominent view about why this whole episode is worthy of mourning, of grief, of a special fast day, is because once we make the Torah accessible to the non-Jewish world, then inevitably they falsify the Torah, they twist its meaning.
It's open to criticism.
Correct. As long as the Torah was in Lashon Kodesh, again, you may have a few Goyim who knew Hebrew, and there were, I'm not saying no, but it was a whole different type of approach. And there was a possibility of explaining the depth of the Hebrew language, the Holy Tongue, and it should be understood on so many different levels, with nuances of differences. But once you translate it to another language, like, for example, the Christians supposedly still respect the Old Testament. But if you read the translation of the Old Testament, there's so many falsifications. You know, the Rambam thinks that part of the reason why Christianity is so problematic is because of their translation and distortion of the Torah. So the fact that the Torah at this point in time, for the first moment in history, became accessible to the nations of the world, specifically to the Greeks, and then ultimately from Greek it was translated to many different languages, that reduces the honor and the respect in the eyes of the world that the Torah had. Now to finish up to the Mishnah, yeah? We have Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer Af Hasfar Af Bisfarim Lo Itiru Sheikosu El Yevonis Omer Rabbi Abba Bar Omer Rabbi Yochanan Halacha Rav Shimon Gamliel. So it comes out that the only language that you're permitted to translate the Torah into is Yevonis. And yesterday we had a discussion, I'll just very quickly reiterate it. Why is it that since the Talmud HaMelech has the Torah translated to Greek, why should that have any impact on future generations? And the answer is that the Chachamim didn't want to insult those 72 elders who translated the Torah into Greek. Of course, they had a special hetter to do so because their lives were on the line. They didn't have much of a choice. But nevertheless, once that hetter was given, so we don't want to, you know, like retroactively shed a bad light on those Chachamim. Look what they did. So we already accepted such a hetter. But the Gemara now is going to give us a more profound reason as to why the Torah could be translated into Greek. Omer Rav Yochanan, my time with Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Why does he hold that all the Sfar, that with the exception of Ashuris, all other languages are absolutely disqualified for translation of the Torah, with the exception of Greek? And the answer is Omer Kra, the Torah says in Bereishis Perek Tes, Yaft Elokim li Yefes, v'yishkon v'olei Shem. Now this is the bracha that Noach bestows upon his children. And he says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to expand the gvulos, the bounds of Yefes, right? Because Yefes was together with Shem in trying to cover the nakedness of Noach in that case. So he blessed Yefes with Harchavas HaGvul. That's called Yaft Elokim li Yefes. And then, when it gets to Shechina, which is called the Yishkon, Hashvas HaShechina, that's already B'olei Shem, that means Klal Yisrael, the descendants of Shem. So Rav Shimon Gamliel darshins the pasuk the following, that Dvarav Shel Yefes, that the language of Yefes, Yiyu, the spoken language and the words of Yefes will be in the Olei Shem, will penetrate into the tents of Shem, meaning of the children of Shem, which is Klal Yisrael. In other words, the Torah, which is in Olei Shem, is going to be written in the language of the children of Yefes, but not in any other language. So the Gemara says, V'ema, how do you know that it's only the language of the Greeks? After all, the blessing which Noach bestowed upon Yefes was not limited just to the Greek language, because it says in the pasuk, "Bnei Yefes Gomer Umagog Umadai V'Yavon." There were four nations; each had its own language that emanated from Yefes. There was Gomer, there was Magog, there was Madai, there was Yavon. So Yavon, that spoke Yavonis, he was one quarter of the children of Yefes. So it's a very strange thing if Rav Shimon Gamliel is darshaning the pasuk Yaftel Kim Yefes as referring to the language of the Greeks, then he's singling out one of Yefes's children, namely Yavan. But Yavan was only one of four, and there were three other languages. Rav Chiya bar Abba, Hainu Taima. The reason for the drasha of Rav Shimon Gamliel of this pasuk and referring exclusively to Yavan is Dichsiv. The pasuk says Yaftel Kim Yefes. Okay, now what's Yaft Elokim Li Yefes? Yafuso Shel Yefes. In other words, it's the Yafa of Yefes, meaning although Yefes had four children, but the most beautiful one, the most sophisticated and beautiful of all the languages that came from Yefes, is Yavan. And that's called Hayafa Mikol Bnei Yefes. That's Yaft Elokim Li Yefes, Yafuso Shel Yefes. Yehei bi'olei shem, and the language of the Yevonim of that one child of Yefes is the language that is considered Yafuso Shel Yefes. That is the most beautiful of the languages that came from Yefes. So therefore, the Greek language is considered the Loshon HaYafa. It's the supreme or superior language amongst the languages that came from Yefes. And now, Rabbosai, we want to start the new Mishnah. Another Ein Bein. Now, I have here for you an introduction to this Mishnah. And the entire focus of this Mishnah is on the Kohen Gadol, and specifically how the sanctity of Kohuna Gedola is established with regard to this Kohen Gadol. And there are a number of different expressions of the unique sanctity of a Kohen Gadol. Now, let me just say in passing, and this is again a long discussion, that Kedusha, sanctity, is always measured by mitzvos and isurim, like we say in the bracha, every bracha on a mitzvah, we say, Asher kidshanu b'mitzvosav. Now, a woman has all the mitzvahs that a man has, just that the Torah exempted her from time-bound mitzvahs, but a guy only has 7 mitzvahs. Now, within the Jewish nation, we have various individuals who have even more mitzvahs, and the more mitzvahs you have, the more kiddush you have. For example, a nazir has a whole slew of mitzvahs that we don't have, and a levi has mitzvahs that we don't have, and then a kohen has mitzvahs that we don't have if we're not a kohen. And then we get to the highest level of mitzvahs, which is called the kohen gadol. He has a number of mitzvahs which nobody else has. For example, a kohen gadol is not allowed to marry a woman who was once married, even if she was widowed. Whereas a Kohen Hedjot is allowed to marry a widow. A Kohen Gadol is not allowed to be metame, to contract tumor with regard to his 7 krovim. A regular Kohen is allowed to be metame to a mess only in the case of the 7 krovim. That heter doesn't even exist as far as a Kohen Gadol. And number 3, a Kohen Gadol has certain avodos, which are mitzvahs that are incumbent upon him. For example, Yom HaKippurim is almost exclusively the Kohen Gadol. And his avodah was done in what's called shmona begad. He wore 8 begad. Now, how does the kedusha, how does that sanctity become effectuated? Because after all, until he was appointed as a kohen gadol, he's a kohen hedjot. So how do you traverse that level of kedusha from that of a kohen hedjot to a kohen gadol? And the answer is meshicha b'shemen ha-mishcha. This is something that applies to 2 categories of minuyim. That's number 1, a kohen gadol, and number 2, a melech. And there are all sorts of dinim in the parasha about how to create the Shemen HaMishcha. In fact, if you look at the Mishnah at the beginning of Krisus, if someone were to create the Shemen HaMishcha by imitating its components, its ingredients, and he does it not for the sake of Migdash, of Hegdesh, he would be Chayv Kares for such a thing. Now, if the Kohen Gadol does 2 things, number 1, he receives the Meshicha, he's anointed b'Shemen HaMishcha. Number 2, he wears the Shmona B'Gadim. Then he becomes elevated and sanctified to the level of Kohen Gadol. And this is a pasuk in Parshas Emor. It says, "Va'kohen agadol me'achav, asher yutzak al rosho shemen ha-mishcha." And then it says, "Umila umile es yado lilbosh es habagodim." So we have A plus B. That's called the Kohen Gadol. So again, the Shemen HaMishcha was created by Moshe Rabbeinu back in the Midbar. Moshe Rabbeinu used this Shemen HaMishcha to be Moshech Aaron as the Kohen Gadol. But later in other generations, that Shemen HaMishcha was passed down from generation to generation. And at the end of Sefer Shmos, the Pasuk says, Shemen Mishchas Kodesh Yezeli Lidoro Seichem. Now all this continued until Yoshio HaMelech. At the time of Yoshio HaMelech, he put into Gniza 2 things. Now again, the first base of Mikdash is still standing. But he put into Gniza, number 1, the Aron, and number 2, a tzluchis of Shemen HaMishcha, the remaining Shemen HaMishcha that was in a jar that was handed down from one generation to another generation from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. So now the question becomes, after the Shemen HaMishcha is lost, from that moment of time and on, and again, we're still talking when, I don't know how many years are left of the Bayis Rishon from Yoshio HaMelech, we could check that out, and then for 4 centuries plus in Bayis Sheni, there was no Mashiach of a Kohen Gadol for the Shemen HaMishcha. And the only way that the Kohen Gadol could become a Kohen Gadol would be through Levishas Shmona Begadim. So we had the Shmona Begadim and the Kohen Gadol, we did not have the Shemen HaMishcha. And now, from the time of Yoshio HaMelech and onwards, the Kedusha of the Kohen Gadol was effectuated in a singular way by the Levishas Begadim. And the status, or shall I say the name of a Kohen Gadol, in this case, is called a Kohen Merubah Begadim. Now, our Mishnah wants to know what exactly is the difference, if there is any difference, between the following two Kohanim Gedolim. One Kohen Gadol before the time of Yoshio was a Kohen Mashuach B'Shemen HaMishcha, that was his title. And the other Kohen, post Yeshayahu HaMelech, was called a Kohen Meruba Begadim, meaning his sanctity was engendered by wearing a Begadim. Are there any differences between the two? One is Mashuach B'Shemen HaMishcha, and the other is, in the absence of Shemen HaMishcha, Meruba Begadim. In other words, he entered into Kohuna Gedola because he wore four extra Begadim to the four Begadim of a Kohen Hedjot. The Kohen Hedjot wears four Begadim, and the Kohen Gadol wears eight Begadim. Now, if we had the Encyclopedia Talmudit on the Big Day Kohuna, he has beautiful diagrams there of the four Begadim that were worn by the Kohen Hedjot and the extra four that were worn by the Kohen Gadol. So if I remember, again, if somebody could send me an email just to remind me, I have the Encyclopedia Talmudit in my house in Har Nof, I would bring it in and show you the diagrams. There's also a book called Big Day Kohuna where they have these diagrams. In any event, our Mishnah is going to address the differences between a Kohen Moshuach B'Shemen HaMishcha as opposed to a Kohen Merub B'Gadim. And the Mishnah is going to go even beyond that. The Mishnah is also going to clarify, is there a difference between a Kohen Gadol who is currently active, that's called a Kohen HaMishamesh, the active Kohen Gadol, as opposed to a Kohen L'Sha'avar, meaning in the past he served, but he's no longer serving in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, let me give you an example of a Kohen Sha'avar. Let's take the example of a Kohen who contracted Tumah before Yom Kippur. Okay, or let's say he was simply unable, he was captivated by the Goyim, whatever it is, he wasn't able to serve as a Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, so they appointed a substitute Kohen Gadol. Now, the real Kohen Gadol is the first Kohen Gadol. And even though he's been replaced, that's only on a temporary basis. And as soon as he can get back into the ballpark, right? In other words, as soon as the tumah is removed or whatever psul he had, or he gets freed from captivity, then he goes right back into the position of Kohen Gadol HaMishamesh. The Kohen Gadol who was second string, who was appointed as a substitute on a temporary basis, his status is that of a Kohen Sha'avar, meaning now he's not an active Kohen Gadol, he's not a Mishamesh, but he's a Kohen Sha'avar. So our Mishnah is going to address the differences between the following two categories, no, four categories of Kohen Gadol, but two divisions of two different categories, whatever. Anyway, the first division is between a Kohen Gadol, Moshuach B'Shem and HaMishcha, as opposed to a Kohen Gadol, Meruba Begadim, and the second distinction is between a Kohen HaMishamesh and a Kohen Sha'avar. Eric?
The Shemin HaMishka, why did they not make any more? I mean, everything else, they made more of.
I think it's based on a Pasuk, Lidoro Sechem. Let me just see if he quotes the Sugya Yuma. Just one second. Yeah, I think there's a sugya yuma about that point, and they darshan for the word lidor sechem that Moshe Rabbeinu knew the exact ingredients. But you know what? Let me get back to you on that. I don't want to say something that's not midu. So let's just read the Mishnah very quickly, and then I'll let you go. Ein ben koi mashuach b'shem and mishkal l'meruv begadim ella par. This is called a chatos. It's a special karma called a bar chatos, haba al kol mitzvahs. Okay, so tomorrow, B'li Neder, we're going to discuss an entire parasha in Vayikra Perek Dalid, which is the parasha of the chet of a Kohen Gadol. And if a Kohen Gadol sins, he has to bring a bar chatos. And that's not true for a Kohen Meruba B'Gadol. Number two, the Mishnah says, Ein ben Kohen Mishamesh L'Kohen Sha'ovar Ela Parchatos B'Yom HaKippurim. So this is not the par for violating the Mitzvah HaTorah. This is the par that's required every Yom HaKippurim and has to be brought as what's called a Chatos Primus. Maybe we'll talk about what a Chatos Primus is on Yom HaKippurim. And that only applies to a Kohen a kohen ha-meshamesh. So kohen she'ovar would not be capable of bringing this parchatos, and we have to see exactly how that impacts on the avodas yom ha-kippurim. And finally, asiris ha-eifa. This has to do with what's called minchas chavitim, and we'll talk about b'li neder tomorrow. So tomorrow we're back here on daf tesom in beis, the mishnah vein bein. And hopefully tomorrow we'll finish up that Mishnah so that next week we can go on to the Bava Gedola and the Bava Ketana. And, you know, we took a little bit of, you know, a little, that's an understatement of a digression into laws of Tava. Then we spoke about Zav and Zava. We spoke about Mitzora and Muskar and Muchlat. And then we spoke about Sfarim and Sifrei Torah and Mezuzas and Tefillin. I mean, now we're getting into Kodshim. So if we haven't done enough of a spread out, you know, beyond Megillah, beyond Purim, hold your horses, because we're going even further away from Megillah and Purim. Although Purim Kippur, right? If we go with the Arizal, what we're going to talk about a lot tomorrow is Yom HaKippurim. So that's at least somewhat related to Purim. I wish everyone a great day.